Central Jersey Talk Radio, Central Jersey 1450, WCTC with the Restaurant Guys. Call them now at 732-545-9282. 732-545-9282.
Hello, everybody, and good morning. You are listening to The Restaurant Guys. I'm Mark Pascal here with Francis Schott. Together, we own Stage Left and Catherine Lombardi restaurants in New Brunswick, New Jersey. We're here to give you the inside track on food, wine, and the finer things in life. You can listen to us every day from 11 to noon. Reach us through restaurantguysradio.com or download our podcast on iTunes.
Hi.
Hey, how are you?
I always say good morning, Mark. I wanted to mix it up. Good morning, Mark.
Good morning, Francis.
How are you?
I'm well.
New York City bans trans fats. Big in the news today.
Big news. I've decided I'm amending my position on trans fats.
What the heck is wrong with you? What do you mean?
I'm amending. I think that let's just make them illegal. Quit it. Make them illegal.
You want to make Crisco illegal?
Crisco illegal. Take it off the market.
The restaurant guys disagree on a food type.
Take them off the market. It's poison. Get rid of it.
So is cholesterol.
Well, but cholesterol,
French
that's
fries.
Not true.
French
not,
fries.
Not true.
French fries illegal.
French fries have redeeming quality. Trans fats have none.
What are the redeeming qualities of a French fry? Not a potato, mind you, a French fry. What
it's
are the
got vitamins. It's kids are eating food with vitamins in it.
What if we fortify the trans fats? Just kidding. Vitamin D enhanced.
You're
Crisco?
An idiot.
No, I'm
seriously,
just
trans fats. Let's think about it. I mean, is it cyanide illegal? If it made your food crispier, would you make cyanide legal?
All right, hold on.
Because it makes your food crispier.
Trans fats are
poison. There's no doubt about it. They will shorten your lifespan. They don't add to food quality. All they do is save big companies money. That's the only thing they do.
I saw you shoving a Dunkin' Donut in your mouth the other day.
No,
what are the
you haven't seen me shove a Dunkin' Donut in my mouth for years, so you be quiet, mister.
Okay, but do you think Dunkin' Donuts
now,
would be illegal?
Now, the little bakery around the corner from my house, that's a whole different question.
No, hold on a second. Donuts. Okay. Really, really no redeeming qualities. No, you don't need donuts. We don't need donuts at all. They will shorten your life.
But I guess my point is trans fats don't make food better. They make
but
it
in,
last longer.
In your opinion, but
they
if
make
I,
it last longer.
Yeah,
so
but if I live alone at home and I don't get out to the store much, and I want my food to last longer and be shelf stable, and I want to use if I want to be
but,
at home,
hold on, but if cyanide made your food last longer or made your food crispy, would you say, well, let's keep it on the market? It's poison.
But trans fats are not a poison.
Yes,
they
are. I guess that the research that I've read about trans fats is it is indeed poison. But every single study I've read, trans fats will reduce your lifespan.
So will our diet, the way that we eat. I mean,
But trans fats don't have the redeeming quality, and I guess that's the point. There is no redeeming quality to trans fats.
If I, as a consumer, like the way that Crisco makes my pie crust feel, like the fact that I can throw that jar, my mother, when we moved out of Orange and moved to Livingston in 1976, moved the Crisco with us, and it's still in her counter, and I could go and bake a pie with it today. If I, as a consumer, want that, and that's a redeeming quality to me, you know, you're defining a poison as anything that's bad for you or something that, in your opinion, doesn't have...
It's not my opinion.
In your opinion, doesn't have a redeeming quality. I don't doubt that trans fats are bad for you, and so are cigarettes, and so are most candies, and so is most ice cream, and so certainly are sliders from White Castle. There aren't really redeeming qualities there either as far as I'm concerned, so why shouldn't we make those illegal as well?
Because trans fats are actually poison. The difference here is, why shouldn't cyanide be legal to put in my food if I want to put cyanide in
but
my food?
Hold on.
Answer my question.
Because cyanide is a poison by my definition. Trans fats are not a poison by my definition.
Well, I think we have a different definition as
well. But if trans fats are a poison, why aren't McDonald's cheeseburgers poisoned?
Because McDonald's cheeseburgers have a redeeming quality to
What's
them.
What's the redeeming quality?
The redeeming quality is they have some nourishment. You can sustain life on
Not
McDonald's
for very
cheeseburger.
Long. Have you seen that movie? No, I disagree. I think that
I don't understand. I mean, truly,
should cigarettes be illegal?
Maybe, true, but we don't need to get into that argument. Truly. Maybe. I think that maybe cigarettes should be illegal, honestly. But truly, trans fats, the only reason that trans fats exist are to take something that would normally last a week, 2 weeks, 3 weeks, and make it so that it can last 8 months, a year, 2 years.
So maybe I'm an old woman who doesn't like to cook very often. And
come on, Francis.
You've accused me of being an old woman on several occasions. No, I'm just saying that the consumer has the choice. You want to make, and I believe, because I've really thought about it a lot, because a lot of our colleagues in the restaurant business are against labeling.
Mm-hmm.
And frankly, the labeling laws as they have been proposed, which would require restaurants to keep track of the original label of every ingredient they ever used and everything, are onerous. However, I think that if you make me say on my menu, warning, trans fats inside, then who are you to tell me?
You know what? That's what got me to thinking about this. Okay, what got me to thinking about this is, okay, how could any government come in and say trans fats are so bad for you that they are going to be illegal in all restaurants?
Yeah.
But yet not make them illegal at the food town. Not make them illegal.
Well, that's where I totally agree. They should not. If you're going.
Okay. And I guess that's from where I come. Okay. That's. You're telling me trans fats, and I'm reading the literature on trans fats. Hard to argue with the fact that trans fats will shorten your life. Okay.
That's why they call them shortening.
Oh.
In another meeting.
I can't talk to you about this anymore.
No, here's the deal. I think, you know, it's funny. This is, for those of you in listener land who aren't at our desks at 3 o'clock in the morning, or our desks are next to each other at the end of the night, this is where we often wind up. We agree. The debate should be about whether trans fats are legal or not. Not trans fats are legal, but you can't have them in restaurants. That makes no sense at all. That's the cowardly way out. Why in the world? If they are indeed that bad for you that they need to be illegal in restaurants, they should be illegal.
I totally agree. Of course, I mean.
However, I think that they should be labeled and you should be able to get them. But the debate shouldn't be, okay, it's legal, but you can't do it in a restaurant. I mean, we don't even have the secondhand smoking argument. I mean, no one splatters their trans fats on you when you're sitting next to you. You know what I mean? There's no secondhand trans fats.
Fat people don't get fatter and take some of your chair.
It's not contagious. You know what I mean? I mean, if you're sitting next to them on an airplane, you got a problem. But that's the issue.
But I really think that if everything I'm reading is true, and frankly, I do believe that it's true.
Uh-huh.
Then maybe trans fats shouldn't be something that we do in this country. I mean, I look at, just as an example, look at the European government, we're going to say 20 years ago.
France 20 years ago.
Based, rather than our government 20 years ago. We allowed over 480 different preservatives that were legal here.
And France,
there were seven. In France.
And believe me, was that a bad thing? Mark and I have walked all around the world. We've been in, and if you're walking down the street in Boise, Idaho, or anywhere in France, and you want to get something to eat, you'd be happier being in any European country.
FDA bans a lot of stuff. You know, maybe they should be banning Teflon too.
But we both agree that it should be illegal or legal, but not legal yet banned in restaurants. I don't get that at all. When we come back, we're going to be talking with Clifford Wright about his book, Some Like It Hot, Spicy Favorites from the World's Hot Zone. You're going to learn more than you ever wanted to know about peppers. You're listening to The Restaurant Guys. Central Jersey, 1450. The time is 11:15.
Central Jersey Talk Radio, Central Jersey 1450, WCTC with the Restaurant Guys.
Hey everybody, welcome back. You're listening to the Restaurant Guys, Mark and Francis of Stage Left and Catherine Lombardi Restaurants in downtown New Brunswick. Now, Clifford Wright is an accomplished author on food topics and also on foreign affairs. He's James Beard Award winner, he's an expert in particular on the regions of the cuisines of the Mediterranean. And he joins us today to discuss his book, Some Like It Hot, Spicy Favorites from the World's Hot Zones.
Clifford, welcome to the show.
Well, thank you. A pleasure to be with you guys.
You know, I love, we've read a bunch of your stuff in the past, but I this book is really quite a tome on, and it's all dedicated to piquant hot food. Whatever prompted you to write a book this big on that topic?
Well, I must say I wish it was an original idea, but my editor and I were having lunch one day, and we were trying to dream up a project, and she suggested this, and I said, gosh, I don't know, I'm not really a chili head. But I thought, you know, this is a wonderful opportunity to learn a lot. And, boy, did I learn a lot, more than I ever wanted to know. But I became fascinated with very spicy food. And the way we kind of approached it was, look, anybody can throw some chili into a food and call it spicy. Let's look at the traditions. And so I searched around the world. Luckily, you can do this via the Internet now, to see what cuisines had the absolutely ridiculously hottest food, off the chart hot. And we identified 14 cuisines around the world, and that's what the book is based on.
You know, Clifford, you're going to have to define the term chili head.
A chili head is someone who just loves to eat chilies, put them into things, grow them, wear chili aprons and chili hats, and is just chili mad.
Well, is that... The way I see, I know a lot of guys who are into that, and it's sort of a, in this culture anyway, it seems it's sort of a macho thing. Like,
very
I can eat
so.
The hottest hotter of the hot. It's like the same guy who eats 4,700 hot dogs in 7 minutes on Coney Island.
Now, hold on. It's not the same guy.
It's same driving force behind him. Is there a macho element to, like, being able to have the hottest chili?
Well, you know, it's interesting. That does exist. I kind of come up with these hypotheses as to why people eat such hot food, because not everyone can. And this kind of macho idea of chili exists only in one culture, and that's namely ours. And probably that's a result of the fact that it was sort of introduced to American cuisine, first in the Southwest, where it actually grows rather naturally. And that's where you find it, where guys will just kind of knock back three or four habaneros and...
prove what a man they are.
And what a man they are.
Always impresses me.
I always like to prove my manhood differently.
Well, what I always say is, the guys who do that, do you really want to kiss a guy like that? Why don't you come over here and kiss me? Anyway.
If you did, you would have an eye-opener, let me tell you.
And if they kissed you on your eye, you would have a painful eye. It would hurt.
Very painful.
Now, you said something that you sort of mentioned in passing that I want to ask, is it really true? Are there some people who constitutionally can't eat chilies, or is it just a matter of taste?
That's a good question. I'm not sure what the correct answer is, but I suspect it's a matter of taste. Now, I do know that people who react to chilies, either the fumes in the air, I know people who can't even be in a kitchen where chilies are being used, and they are sort of revolted by it. That's a real sensation they're having. Is it harmful to them? Are they allergic to it? No, not at all.
Mm.
They're just paying more attention to how they're feeling, whereas someone who, let's say, is a chili head feels the same thing but is overcoming it.
Now, do you build up a resistance to chilies? If you have more and more chilies, will you eventually not notice the heat as much?
Yes. In fact, that is exactly what happened to me when I was writing this book. When I started it, the first few recipe tests, I was horrified. And I said to my girlfriend, I don't know how I'm going to write this book because I can't eat this stuff every day. Well, shortly, I began eating the stuff every day. And then after about 8-9 months... my girlfriend and I and one of my kids were sitting at a dinner table at home with some friends over for some recipe tests. The friends were choking on the floor, and we were just eating away calmly, not even talking about the food.
You know what I think happened?
We got used to it.
Your head slowly began to be shaped like a chili.
Maybe that's what happened.
Now, you know, go ahead.
No, I was just going to say, and yes, not only do you build up a tolerance for it to the point where you don't even notice you're eating hot food, but you also lose that tolerance. If you stop eating, you'll lose it.
Now, in your book, you say that as you develop this tolerance for the heat of chili, for the capsaicin that's in the chilies, you then can see beyond just the heat and look at, there's a lot of complexity in different kinds of chili and what chili does to the rest of food. How does that work?
You know, that's really interesting, because when I had heard that before writing this book, and I just didn't believe it. I just thought the heat on the tongue is just going to kill everything. But in fact, what's happening is, as you are becoming used to the heat of the chili, you notice that, in fact, there are different tastes to different chilies. After all, there's a floral element to all chilies, because chilies are, in fact, the flower that has turned into this fruit. And called the chili. And each flower has a different fragrance and a different smell. And
so if someone only has experience with, say, cayenne pepper and they just get experience it for the heat, if they take a little time and work through it, they can see more complexity and see the differences in chilies.
Absolutely. But with cayenne pepper, don't forget that's also dried, so it changes. Now, if you were to actually come across a cayenne pepper that was fresh, it would taste different than the powdered dry cayenne.
When we come back, we're going to talk more about that distinction and about how chili is a spice, but it's also a vegetable, which makes it kind of unique in the food world. We're talking with Clifford Wright about his book, Some Like It Hot, Spicy Favorites from the World's Hot Zones. You can find out about it at restaurantguysradio.com. You're listening to The Restaurant Guys, Central Jersey, 1450. The time is 11:25.
Floors, walls, and lighting. The Restaurant Guys learned long ago that the key to making a space look great are floors, walls, and lighting. There's no tougher test to a carpet than a busy restaurant. From design to installation to cleaning, the Gillespie Group has handled the Restaurant Guys restaurant floors for more than 10 years. Designers know what looks great on the first day. Bob Gillespie knows what will continue to look great year after year. Gillespie doesn't just install carpets. Their quality clean division has experience and expertise to keep that carpet looking great. In our business, it's the details that matter. In your home or office, the details make a lasting impression. The Gillespie Group handles projects from large hotels to offices right down to your living room. Look down. Go on, look down. Right there by your feet. You see. You need the Gillespie Group. Call them at 732-254-5508 or visit them at thegillespiegroup.com. Tell them the Restaurant Guys sent you and get a free cleaning with any installation. Remember, it's Gillespie for carpet and flooring, 732-254-5508.
Central Jersey Talk Radio, 1450 WCTC.
Hey, you're back with the Restaurant Guys, Mark and Francis of Stage Left and Catherine Lombardi Restaurant. We're talking with Clifford Wright about his great book, Some Like It Hot. It's basically everything you ever wanted to know about chilies. You know, Clifford, I got to tell you, do you know how I stumbled across your book?
Oh, tell me.
I was in the bookstore. I mean, I still go to bookstores occasionally, especially if I'm stuck in airports or train stations. That's where I sort of gravitate to.
Yeah.
And I was looking for a book that I'd read about that came out about the same time as your book called The Hot Zone.
Oh, yeah.
Are you familiar with this?
Yes, I am. Yeah.
Very different book than yours.
It's about the most contagious diseases in the world and what they do to your body. And so I asked the clerk for The Hot Zone, and he sent me to Some Like It Hot. And I said, no, that's not it. Ooh, that looks interesting.
And so
I read them both on the plane together. Very different books. Now why, Clifford, The Hot Zone, a great book, by the way. I'll put that up on the website as well. Nothing to do with food. Well, don't do that. Read it after you eat. Why do some cultures embrace hot food and other cultures, you know, Midwestern Americans, not?
You know, I tried to answer that question in the book, and there's no definitive answer. But one, there's a variety of hypotheses, and none of them really work very well. But the one that I always found to be the most convincing is that you look at where the spiciest foods are, the hottest spices are used. It's always in areas that are very poor traditionally in the world. Now, that doesn't go that far because there are some other areas in the world that are poor also that don't use spicy hot food. But basically the idea was if you have very bland food, as poor people, let's say in Africa, did, eating only millet or porridge of some kind, the one way you kind of make your food more exciting if you don't have access to lots of meat and fat and oils is to spice it up.
Okay.
And that's probably the best hypothesis.
Cool. Corollary question I want you to think about, and after the news we're going to pick it up on the other side. Why are the places in the world where there are less spice more boring? That's what I want to know.
Because
salsa dancing does not happen in Ohio. You know what I'm saying?
Right.
When we come back after the news, we're going to be talking more
only underground
with Clifford Wright about his book, Some Like It Hot. You're listening to The Restaurant Guys, Central Jersey, 1450. The time is 11:30.
Central Jersey Talk Radio, Central Jersey 1450, WCTC with the Restaurant Guys. Call them now at 732-545-9282. 732-545-9282.
Hello, everybody, and welcome back. You are listening to the Restaurant Guys. I'm Mark Pascal, and I'm here with Francis Schott. Together we own Stage Left and Captain Lombardi restaurants in New Brunswick, New Jersey. We're here to give you the inside track on food, wine, and the finer things in life.
You can listen to us every day from 11 to noon. Reach through restaurantguysradio.com or download our podcast on iTunes.
Today we're talking with Clifford Wright about his book, Some Like It Hot, Spicy Favorites from the World's Hot Zones, which is a book about the chili pepper, which is an important part of world cuisine but wasn't always. And it's you know, like so many of the books that we talk about on this show, it talks about the history and the place and the whys and wherefores of the pepper, and it also gives you a bunch of recipes. I mean, I don't want to mislead anybody. I don't think we made it clear that this is actually a cookbook. So if you like spicy food from mildly spicy to, like, you can't handle it, you can't handle the truth spicy, it's a great book, and you can link to it on our website, restaurantguysradio.com. We'll click through. You can click through and buy it there.
Now, Clifford, one of the things that your book tells us is, much like carbonated soda, chili peppers affect the pain centers in our brain. Why is that affecting that pain center pleasurable to some people and not pleasurable to others?
Well, that's kind of a tough question. That's a neurological question. I'm no neurologist. So let me give you the answer that I kind of best understand. It all has to do with our taste buds and the number of taste buds that we have on our tongue. And that message gets sent to the brain, and everyone interprets it as hot and hurtful, but it doesn't actually hurt. There's nothing harmful about chewing a chili pepper. The message being sent to the brain, though, is that this may be harmful. Some people like that, and other people don't, and that may very well just be a psychological preference.
Is it genetic, or are
there... There is some genetics involved, yes. Especially the number of taste buds that you have. There's super tasters and people who don't taste very much, and those are genetic instances.
Well, now, in your book, you go through a number of different... I mean, and like I said just a moment ago, it is indeed a cookbook, and you do go, because you're a food historian as well as a cookbook author, and you do go from country to country. What makes... You know, we have a number of chefs and cookbook authors on the show, and one of the things we often talk about is authenticity.
Right. That
you go into a Szechuan restaurant and you order stuff off the menu in Brooklyn.
Right.
You're not getting what you get in the Sichuan province of China, right?
Very probably not, partly because of who the audience is. But can you get authentic Sichuan food in this country? Yes, you can if you're a restaurant and you have a clientele that demands it, like people from your province of Sichuan. But the whole business of authenticity is fraught with difficulty, because what exactly is authentic? I'll tell you, I had a Korean friend of mine who not only was a good cook, but helped me a lot in doing some of the Korean recipes for the cookbook. And she was doing all these kind of like shortcuts, and I thought, gosh, that doesn't sound very authentic. And she said, but don't forget, you know, a cook in Korea is going to look for shortcuts just the way an American cook is.
Mm-hmm.
And it's not less authentic because you're doing that. You know, a German cook today doesn't make their own sauerkraut. It's perfectly fine to go out and buy your sauerkraut. Same with your Korean cook who's using store-bought kimchi. You know, only the old people, as my friend said, actually make their own kimchi.
Right, right. But you're not burying your kimchi in the backyard.
But I like old people.
And I like to go over old people's houses when they cook for me.
Yeah, absolutely.
You know, I like the book, and I think the book is very interesting as a cookbook. And I think one of the things that I want to point out to people that you have in here, two things that I think are great. One is you have a hotness scale that shows for each recipe everything from piquant through incendiary, blistering, and molten to thermonuclear. So people can sort of judge for themselves whether they want to try and go whole hog. But if somebody who doesn't have a lot of experience with peppers goes for a thermonuclear recipe right away, they're gonna burn themselves, right?
They are, and it's not a good place to start. If you don't have a lot of experience eating chilies, you don't want to start out at thermonuclear. It'll just turn you off.
Mm.
You want to start out with the mildest form, and then you build yourself up. Because like I said earlier, you get acclimated to the chili. You can't just start off expecting to swim on the first time.
Well, now, let's talk about another part of your book. I'm always fascinated by food history and the history of the movement of cuisines and culture. You write that the most important – I mean, I've always heard people say that the most important food exchange that happened when Columbus discovered, quote-unquote, the New World was that tomatoes went back to Europe.
Correct.
You say that you think that the chili going back to the old world
was even more important.
Important. Why is that?
It may be, because what it did is it provided not so much economically. The tomato and the potato were economically much more important. But what the chili did is it provided people around the world a way of changing their cuisine, making it more nutritious without having to spend a lot of money, because the chili grows just about everywhere. So all the places that you find the chili today is not native, except for South America. It is not native there. It had to be transported there and then grown there. And then all of a sudden people could use this vegetable slash spice in their cooking without paying for expensive imported spices.
So what spices were we using prior to chilies?
Well, the hot spices was black pepper. Mm-hmm. But black pepper was expensive. Black pepper only grows in a small area of the Kerala state of India and a little bit in Indonesia. And that's where all of our black pepper has to come from.
Well, and, you know, it's funny because we don't think of it today as you know, if you look back historically or if you've studied history at all, the spice trade was what drove the British East India Company, the Dutch East India Company. The spice trade was, if maybe the largest trade and responsible for trade wars and navies. And
so, it was really the engine to the world economy for about 500 years. And up until the mid-17th century, all trade was based on spices and grain, and spices mostly.
Now,
that's how many people say the Italian Renaissance could only happen because of the spice trade.
Because they came through Italy.
Not only that, but it made the Italians rich.
Yeah. Well, now, what did the chili do to the spice trade? Did it have an effect at all?
Well, it's funny. I've got an article coming out in a journal called Gastronomica about this very question, and it seems as if the two should be related, because the spice trade dies off at the same time that the chili is diffusing around the world after its discovery in 1492 by Europeans. But if you look at the historical record, it turns out that the two don't have any relationship to each other. People's tastes were changing, and the chili was coming out at the same time, but the two are unrelated.
Why did the spice trade die off?
It died off for a number of reasons. One, people began thinking that maybe spices weren't so necessary after all. You remember that in the in Holland there was a tulip craze,
mm-hmm.
That almost destroyed the economy of Europe, but simply because of what? People's fascination with tulips. Tulips in themselves aren't important at all. It was the same situation with spices.
So people just decided to take after the Irish and use no spices at all.
I guess that's what they did. I mean, it's interesting because no one would think of Italian food today as spicy. It's aromatic, sure, but it's not spicy. But, you know, 600 years ago, Italian food was probably inedibly spicy.
To Northern Europe.
Right, to us today.
Was the food prior to, I mean, was the food bland except for rich people's food when spices were so expensive? Was most people's gruel just bland food?
Very bland. Very bland, very boring, and it was the same thing day after day after day. I mean, the most common dish found in medieval Europe was cabbage soup. And don't think of cabbage soup with maybe some delicious pancetta in it. I mean, cabbage soup, cabbage cut up with water,
just
and that's it.
You just come over to my family's house on St. Patrick's Day. You can still have. For peasants, I come from peasant stock. I'm certain of it.
Cabbage soup that doesn't taste much better than the rock soup.
Maybe a little corned beef that was cooked in a cabbage soup. When we come back, we'll be talking a little bit more with Clifford Wright about Some Like It Hot, his book on chilies and the world economy. You're listening to The Restaurant Guys, Central Jersey, 1450. The time is 11:45.
Let me talk to you about lighting, and specifically about how you can enhance the appeal of any space. Lighting is a powerful, emotional, and aesthetic force. It's one of the most important elements of design. More than anything else, it sets the mood and tone for an entire experience. A room pops or it doesn't, based on lighting. Lights on 9 is a top-notch commercial and retail lighting supplier. Lights on 9 supplied all the lights for our award-winning Catherine Lombardi restaurant, inside and out, dining room and kitchen. Lights on 9 has everything from tasteful and stylish chandeliers to table and floor lamps to outdoor lighting for illuminating a building or walkway or a sign. At Lights on 9, the service is exemplary, expert, and knowledgeable. They ship anywhere in the continental United States for free. Their retail store is in the Galleria Shopping Center on Route 9 in Manalapan. They're open 7 days a week. Call them at 732-308-9166. That's 732-308-9166. Or visit them at lightson9.com. That's lightson9.com.
Central Jersey Talk Radio, Central Jersey 1450, WCTC with the Restaurant Guys.
Hey, everybody, welcome back. You're listening to the Restaurant Guys, Mark and Francis of Stage Left and Captain Lombardi Restaurant. Our guest today is Clifford Wright. His book is Some Like It Hot, Spicy Favorites from the World's Hot Zones, which is about all about chiles. There's a wonderful foreword which talks about chili pepper and how peppers have sort of taken over the world. And we were talking about that for the last part of the show. But it is a cookbook. And Clifford, if somebody wanted to pick up this book or give it as a Christmas present and make some things out of it, where should they start?
You mean where should they start in the bookstore, or where should they start in the book?
No, I think the food aisle is pretty good, and stay away from that other book we were talking about. No, I think if I wanted to start maybe playing around with chilies, and I know what they are, but I'm not that conversant with them. What kind of recipes should I go for? Where would you point me to start? What recipes would you want me to start with in the book?
Well, you know, each recipe has a little scheme, which is a match, which is a lit match, which is the least hot, to a firecracker, to a bonfire. To a volcano, to a thermonuclear explosion, or a sun figure. And I would say you start with the least hot. So if you wanted to make a cream of avocado soup from Mexico, which is just simply ripe avocados, cream, sherry, lime, some garlic, and a little bit of chili, that would be a perfect place to start. Mm-hmm. And then you move your way up the scale to the hotter and hotter dishes.
So recently, Clifford, we had Floyd Cardos on from Tabla Restaurant. One of the things that Floyd said was it was very important to keep fresh spices, that your spices, you not let them get too old. Is that the same case with chilies?
With dried chilies, no, actually it's not, and I'll tell you why. The chilies as a spice come in two forms, fresh and dried. Fresh chilies, of course, will just rot if you hold on to them too long. But let's talk about dried chilies. The interesting thing about dried chili is that if you keep it ground in a dark place, it will retain its pungency for a pretty long time, longer than most other spices retain their pungency. So you can hold on to it. Don't forget, you're not buying pounds and pounds of chili powder. At the most, you're buying a small jar, let's say, and that will that can easily be stored for a year.
You know, it's funny. When we I was just reminded of, we have a – at our bar, we serve a burger. At one of our restaurants at the bar, we serve a burger, which has been called the best burger in America by a couple of publications. But one of the things it comes with is a chipotle mayonnaise.
Oh, yeah.
And chipotle peppers are smoked habaneros. It's a beautiful – and to work it in with – no, it's not a smoked habanero. It's a
– smoked jalapeno.
Smoked jalapeno. And we serve this with the burger, and it's delicious. But I have a – there's a Mexican guy who works for us, has worked for us for a long time, and I said – yeah, I want the chipotle mayo to be hot. And he said to me in Spanish, he said, do you want it Mexican hot or Irish guy hot?
That's a good question.
And I said Irish guy hot, because Mexican hot I don't think any of us can handle. Now, one of the things that's interesting about spices that people who are involved with them learn very quickly is, while they're not very wine-friendly overall, not hot spices or mild spices can go well with some wines, particularly Rieslings and wines with a little bit of sweetness to them. But let's talk about what to drink with spicy food. Water does nothing. A lot of people think when they have something that's very hot and it's uncomfortable for them and they want to clean off their tongue, they take a glass of water. It's like putting water on a chemical fire. It does absolutely nothing for you. Am I right about that?
That is very true. And not only water, in fact, anything will not alleviate that burn from the capsaicin.
How about sour cream and yogurt and stuff like that?
That will help the most. That's probably the best thing. So a perfect drink for a very, very spicy meal may be that Indian drink known as lassi. But frankly, I'd forget about trying to cool off the heat. And what I'm interested in is just what liquid do I want to drink when I'm eating this very mm-hmm. spicy food? And I find three things to be the best. Something with just a touch of sweetness. So believe it or not, a Coca-Cola sometimes works. Although that tends to be a little bit too sweet. A beer that is cold and has just a touch of sweetness to it is a perfect thing.
Like what kind of beer, what kind of sweetness are you talking about?
I would stay with a beer that's a lager that's light and has a touch of sweetness. So on the kind of mass, the mass brands, Red Stripe from Jamaica or a Rolling Rock, they tend to be bland beers. If you get a beer with too much flavor, the chili kills it off.
Mm-hmm.
So you don't want, this is a kind of contrary to the way most people usually think, and myself included, I try to look for things that don't have too much flavor because it's just not going to complement the chilies.
You know, the one exception I make to that rule is, and maybe it's just because of my prejudices, I find that Guinness Stout works well with a lot of different things. And you may not appreciate the full complexity of the Guinness, but it works well with spicy foods because it sort of evens it all out.
And I find that some of the liquids that I'm drinking with, especially, carbonation for me, if I'm having spicy food, if something I'm drinking is too carbonated, I can find that will add to the agitation of my tongue.
That's right.
Drinking something like a Guinness that doesn't have a lot of carbonation is kind of a brief respite from that.
That's actually a very good point. It should be soothing. And carbonation and chili does not go well together.
Well, and that's why, because Guinness has nitrogen, not CO2. Does my Guinness thing work, or do you think that's a bad idea for most people?
No, I don't think that's a bad idea. Actually, now that you mention it, what I'm thinking is, you know, Guinness is a very smooth, malty, syrupy drink.
Yeah.
And that actually I can picture it having a soothing effect on the tongue.
It always has a soothing effect on my tongue. Spicy food or no. Hey, Clifford.
It's not that my tongue that it has a soothing effect on.
It's everything. It's life. It's the grease of my life. We have to leave it just about there. Can we put up a recipe from yours on our website?
Absolutely. Let me recommend one to you.
Okay.
I think the jerk pork on page 233 is the one you should put up.
Jerk pork. Is that because you think we're a couple of jerks?
soda jerks, right? Or pork jerks.
Okay, we're going to do that one. And if you allow us, we'll ask you afterwards. We're also going to put up the pork vindaloo because our friend Floyd Cardo is from Goa, and that's a recipe from Goa in India as well. We want to sort of tie that all together.
Sounds wonderful.
Hey, thanks. It's been great. The book is Some Like It Hot by Clifford Wright, Spicy Favors from the World Hot Zones. It's got narrative, and it's also a cookbook, and you should pick it up, and you can find out how on our website, restaurantguysradio.com. If you're listening to the Restaurant Guys, Central Jersey, 1450. The time is 11:55.
Central Jersey Talk Radio, 1450 WCTC.
Hey, everybody. Welcome back. You're listening to the Restaurant Guys, Mark and Francis of Stage Left and Captain Lombardi Restaurants. I
hate it when you get that look on your face.
I'm remembering a story that it's actually you're gonna be amused by.
It almost always embarrasses me when you remember a story
with that
look on your face.
I'm gonna embarrass myself. That's why the look is so.
Then I don't mind the look at all.
So similar. I remember senior year of college, or junior year of college.
Which senior year of college?
The first one.
Okay, go ahead.
I only did one junior year. This was junior year of college. We went to college together, for those of you out there. I don't know. We've been annoying each other for many, many years.
And now we're annoying you.
Yeah. You're a ringside seat to the annoyance. And I got fixed up on a date with this beautiful woman, and my plan was to go to where I had my apartment in Manhattan years later on 2nd Avenue in St. Mark's Place. And we were going to go see a play on 2nd Avenue in St. Mark's Place, and I picked the girl up. And we had plans to go to dinner on that little 6th Street between 1st and 2nd Avenue, which is sometimes called Little India. And the girl was Indian.
It was a blind date.
And she was beautiful, and we actually went out a few times after that. But she thought I was a ridiculous moron for bringing her to the faux Indian restaurants on 6th Street between 1st and 2nd. And she got in the car, and I was like, oh, no.
Why didn't you just change plans? Come on, man. You're a quick-thinking-think-on-your-feet kind of guy.
Here's what I did. I said, you know what? My plans were to go to this restaurant called, of all the terrible names, Gandhi. And she thought it was funny. She said, no, let's go. And so we went.
I'm sorry.
And it's very funny. Well, no, what's funny
is a story you've never told me before, by the way, makes it all the funnier.
You met her. You've met her. Mm-hmm. But we went, and then because she was Indian, she ordered the food like that level of heat. And I just sweat most of the night. I was completely emasculated.
I'm really uncomfortable.
I have to go recover from that memory. I hope you've enjoyed the hour listening to The Restaurant Guys. I'm Francis Schott.
And I'm Mark Pascal.
We are The Restaurant Guys, Central Jersey, 1450. The time is 12 noon.